Welcome to Speaking of Grace, the weekly message podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida. We're a multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-generational congregation committed to our mission of loving people into a lifelong friendship with God. We are committed to our vision of being a church without walls, fully engaged in serving the people of our community. Thank you for joining us as we continue Speaking of Grace.
Good morning, Whole Life Church. And good morning to all of those who are worshiping with us online from all over the U.S. and abroad. Welcome. We are so glad you have come to worship here with us this morning. Friends, I am so humbled to have been invited to share with you a message on this first Sabbath of May, the month we celebrate as Mental Health Month. Did I just say celebrate? Maybe celebrate isn't the right word. Maybe observe? No, that doesn't seem better. Maybe discuss? No, not right. As a matter of fact, if there's anything most people don't want to discuss, is mental health. Am I right? Yeah. My name is Hurdley Paolini. I'm a member of this congregation, have been for the past 23 years. I'm just like you. I sit on these pews. I sing songs with you. I share this community with you, and I'm blessed by it. And I also just so happen to be a licensed practicing psychologist. So where do I start on the topic of mental health? A topic embedded in complexity and filled with taboos. Perhaps we start right there. Admitting our discomfort with it, with certain topics. Yet this whole life here is not known for shying away from hard topics, are we? Nope. We are not known for stopping ourselves from re-examining old beliefs that are no longer serving us or looking closely at what does not serve us well, listening to what new life God may be calling us to. So pray with me as we start. Dear God, you are here with us. And what a joy, what an incredible thing it is to feel your presence around us. Thank you. Amen. I thought I had just made one of the biggest mistakes of my life. I had uprooted our family, including three kids, left a thriving small practice in a teaching and practice position at Andrews University, where I had been for 17 years. And I moved here to Florida to be the director of the Center for Physician Well-Being. That it was a Florida hospital at that time, now Advent Health. I had some pretty high hopes, actually, because I had told myself that if you help one physician, right, who sees 30 patients every day and who interacts with dozens of other healthcare professionals, and add to that his or her family, we are exponentially sort of like really adding to the benefits of this. Hundreds of people could benefit just by default in one day. But when I arrived, I found out that the department I was going to be directing had not had a single health professional use its services in the past 2 years that they had been in existence. Yeah. Instead, at every meeting I went to, friends, I was sort of welcome with a bit of hesitation, maybe ambivalence, or a detached interest at best. Or an outright dismissal at worst. We don't need a shrink here. So I found myself as the director of a non-existing department. And the icing on the cake came 2 weeks later when the part-time secretary offered me her resignation, saying she had been waiting for me because she had decided to go back to school. And so she was just waiting for my arrival to give me the resignation. I sat in an empty office, and I was on my knees a lot on that office, that little office, containing no charts, no phones ringing. And I thought, what have I done? I had left a successful practice to apply my skills in a context where physicians and many others didn't believe there was a need for mental health. What I learned quickly is that in medical school residency and in the environment of practice and training, they had learned to split, to deny their own needs, and to pride themselves on not being mere mortals. Everyone had and was continuing to participate in this constructive alternate reality and white knuckling their way through every day. I simply kept repeating to whoever would hear me, if we truly believe in our mission of whole person care, we cannot leave our doctors behind. I kept saying that like a broken record everywhere I went. And I kept shadowing physicians everywhere, learning from them. So at one point, I suggested an onboarding experience for physicians seeking to acquire credentials to practice at our hospitals, like the entry point. Let's normalize the whole thing right from the start, right? There was a lot of gnashing of teeth, but in the end, they agreed with the caveat that they would then survey the physicians 2 months later to see how it went. No pressure. Do you know what happened? No, we did not flop. Physicians would come to meet me one-on-one, reticent at first, and then they wouldn't want to leave after the 50 minutes. There is nothing more powerful than listening to someone and have been listened to. They talked about traumatic experiences in their training, painful personal experiences in their family or illness, and on about kids and parenting and the lack of support they felt. And on, their humanity came to the surface. They seemed relieved to be heard. Of course, we added a CME curriculum and leadership retreat that focused on the whole self as the instrument of the practice. I remember when I first submitted the first CME and I got a response back, what does this have to do with medicine? Ooh, my blood pressure had a few knots up. I slept on it and then I submitted a 5-page bibliography in a 12-page summary. I got one word response back. Okay. Well, within 8 months, friends, we were bursting. The practice was full. It was bursting at the seams. We had to hire a second person. I brought Dr. Sean Zimmerman from Colorado to join me for that practice. He's one of our members here. And now I'm privileged to spend my days and weeks in two worlds, this one of everyday life, just like you, and one in my clinical office at the Institute for Physician Integration, where I see physicians who come and share with me what's actually going on in their lives, their struggles, sometimes their heart-wrenching experiences, the internal and external expectations that lead to workloads that sometimes run against the human limits, the sense of having lost their souls in systems that sometimes create moral injury while stripping them of meaningful interactions, the shattered pieces of hopes and dreams. But you know, friends, this story is not about me. It's about culture, right? Yes, the program succeeded greatly. But the reason I'm telling you this story is because the culture of medicine is not much different from the church cultures in which many of us were raised. Some different nuances, but the white knuckling is the same. Just pray harder, you know. Have more faith. Family, how do you achieve and maintain mental health when we don't even acknowledge its importance? How do you do that? Or we think it's a given and something that does not need our attention. Or that our education, position, or status make us immune. Or worse, that it is something dependent on whether we pray enough, trusting God enough, or all the while denying and ignoring the things that need attending to. If anyone tells you that you can go through this life without pain or sorrow, I can tell you with all certainty, they are lying. And I can also tell you that our economic or social status, our gender or race will not protect us from this reality. Cancer strikes. A spouse leaves. A job is lost. A son or daughter falls into the abyss of addictions. An accident transforms a life. And there are thousands of different ways our brains and hearts are being assaulted on a regular basis. To that, I will add the elephant in the room, if you forgive me ahead of time. The anxiety, fear, and grief that naturally comes from the daily assaults we are experiencing right now. As we wake up to headlines screaming the number of people who lost their lives overnight in another bombing. Whereas we see the funding for medical research that could save lives of the people we love being cut down or taken out altogether. As we watch children cry as they or their parents are snatched off the streets and sent to countries they have never been to and have no connection to. And just like in a dysfunctional family, a witness of abuse is a victim of abuse. No wonder we're tired and we're fearful and we're anxious and we're grieving. This is about the kind of world we want to live in, such as a world where we can call each other to the better angels of ourselves. A world that nurtures compassion and treasures life, which just so happens to be the kind of world that sustains mental health and health in general. You see, friends, there's really nothing mysterious about mental health. It's just like physical health. It is impacted by a combination of variables that can interact with each other. Genetics, environment, childhood and life experiences, daily practices, and these variables that can be lessened or even put on the background depending on experiences we encounter or we create and practices we engage in. Yes, it's a very positive thing. This is really great news. There is no destiny or doomsday. I don't care where we start. We all have hope. You know what we know now? That the brain is neuroplastic. It can and it does change. We didn't know that a while ago. This is not a Pollyannish wish, and it's not an overnight event. But the brain can change depending on what we encounter and what we do and what we practice. The brain is an amazing thing. We were created in a marvelous way. We used to think that the brain stopped developing at a certain age, like around 18. Our new ability to scan the brain now and to see more detailed parts of it and the activity in between these parts has taught us that the brain is extremely interconnected. And that it is also neuroplastic, which means it expands and shrinks and modifies. I'll give you an example. Some time ago, they did a research with cab drivers in London. Now, London is a city that is not like New York on a grid. It's like a maze, okay? This was before GPS, thank God for that, right? But the poor people, the cab drivers in London, they had to study like years for a test called the knowledge. That's how it was, right? And you know what they discovered? That after they studied this test and they were doing this, you know, for a while, and then they would be driving these cabs, you know, in the city of London, that their brains, the part of the brain that had to do with spatial relations, increased. Well, that's fascinating, right? And they also discovered that once they retired in a few years later, that it shrank again. So it's true what they say. If you don't use it, you lose it, right? This is good news for all of us. Our brains are that flexible, right? There were distinct differences between the brains of non-London cab drivers and the cab drivers. Either they knew they were going to be cab drivers when they were children, or their brains were born this way, or something happened while they did their training, right? So we know that it can happen. Another example, several studies involving experienced meditators such as monks, none of us are monks, point to the fact that both stress and relaxation influence the structure and the function of the brain. Brains of experienced meditators increase the gray matter. And the importance of that is that you see those interconnections? It's the gray matter that is conducing the electric impulses. So gray matter is really our friend. Even novices at meditation experience better emotional regulation, better memory, less fear and anxiety, better decision-making ability, and more self-control. There's no artificial separation, folks, between mental health and spiritual health. When the Bible says, think of these things, that's a meditation. Think of these things. Focus on this, right? But when we look at biblical stories, we see that the two are intertwined, always and forever. And Jesus is a prime example. In the Gospel of John, chapter 11, we find that Lazarus has died. Mary and Martha sent word to Jesus days ago, the person you love is sick. Don't you love that? The person you love. They knew. They knew his love intimately. The person you love is sick. Well, and Jesus didn't come in time. By the time he arrives, Lazarus had been in the tomb 4 days, folks. The hope they had is gone. And what they believed was going to happen didn't happen. And when Mary sees Jesus, she falls at his feet and she says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Now, that's not a faith statement, is it? This is a grief statement, folks. It's just real. That's the voice of someone who believed, who trusted, who hoped, and who is now standing in the rubble of that hope, wondering where it all went. And do you know what Jesus did? He doesn't correct her theology. He doesn't say, count your blessings, Mary. He doesn't remind her God has a plan. He doesn't tell her to look at the bright side. He asks where Lazarus is. And then they bring him to the tomb. And what does he do? He weeps. The shortest sentence in the Bible, Jesus wept. Such a good sentence for this moment today. The shortest sentence in the Bible. God standing in the middle of human grief, looking at what death does to people who love each other. He doesn't skip past the pain to get to the miracle. He enters the pain first. He weeps. He feels it with them before he moves through it with them. That's the God we serve. A God who does not ask you to pretend that you are fine when you're not. Which brings us to the first principle I want you to remember from today. Name it. Feel it. Gerald Sitzner, a theologian, religion professor, whose mother, wife, and daughter were killed in a drunk driver accident, recounted his experience in his book, A Grace Disguised, a book that I have read over and over. It's that good. When we plunge into darkness, he says, it is darkness we experience. We feel pain, anguish, sorrow, and despair, and we experience ugliness, meanness, and the absurdity of life. Friends, I experienced such darkness at one time in my life when overnight I became a single parent of 3 boys. It was so dark that at times I thought I couldn't breathe. Have you ever felt such pain that you had no words for it? A time when everything you held dear just burned like ashes in your hands, leaving only devastation behind. Our church here has always believed in whole person care. Body, mind, spirit, not separate compartments, but one integrated human life. Which means talking about mental health from this pulpit isn't importing something foreign into sacred space. It is doing what we have always done. It's tending to the whole life. I can only imagine what it was like for Lazarus' sisters and the whole crowd that gathered to experience Jesus weeping, the divine deeply grieving with us. Grief that has no name and doesn't get expressed has enormous power over us. Grief that gets named, spoken aloud, acknowledged, brought into light, witnessed, begins to lessen slowly over time. How many times I sat here in these pews with the tears running through my face, and you came and you sat with me. Which brings us to the second principle that I'd like to share with you. This is a little tricky, okay? So bear with me here. It's kind of messy. Most of us wants to skip right over it, and I understand why. We split it off. We deny it, minimize the things. We want to skip to the glorious, censored, positive testimonial. But not Jesus. At the end of the Lazarus story, after the miracle, Jesus turns to the people standing around the tomb, and he says, "Unbind him, and then let him go." This isn't pretty, folks. This isn't clean work. He'd been in the tomb for 4 days. Someone once said, mental health is a commitment to reality. What is the reality? What needs unpacking? Present struggles, family history that we keep repeating. What are your or mine growing edges? Every time we do not acknowledge it and instead deny it, every time we hide in shame, it binds us. It keeps us paralyzed. We might as well be in the tomb, oftentimes repeating the past, like in a loop. Unbind, the master says. What trauma, what distorted thoughts, what reactive behavior, family dysfunction is binding you or someone you know? When something in our past has not been named and healed, it keeps showing up everywhere, often unbeknownst to us, unconsciously. We keep bringing these traumas right here to this relationship, depositing in this church, in this job, in this community where it does not belong. It belongs in the past. Other times, because of the trauma and or shame, we try to numb it with mood-altering substances or some other mood-altering unhealthy behavior, only adding to our pain. You see, friends, it's not the pain or the trauma that makes us sick. It is our inability or the lack of forums to process it with. It is not the pain or trauma that defines us either. It is our response to it. That's what defines us. Dr. Gerald Sitzer suggests that navigating pain in a healthy way involves the following. Stay with me. The choices we make. We can isolate. We can become bitter. We can hurt others because we've been hurt. Or we can grieve, mourn deeply as Jesus did. While at the same time, opening our hearts to love even more and to keep on living ever more courageously. My thinking has been shaped by the work of educator and author Parker Palmer, whom I had the privilege of working with. He has a way of sitting with hard things, not rushing to fix them, not looking away from them either. I have tried to carry that in both my personal faith, life of faith, and my clinical work. Parker talks about what he calls the tragic gap. Talk about a tragic gap right now. The gap between the world as it is and the world as we know it ought to be. His counsel is not to quickly try to close that gap, but to learn to stand in that gap, to hold the tension of both realities at once. And he suggests we find others, you and me, to stand together. And here in this place of reality and hope, to rehearse, listen to this, to practice our values. We are in desperate need of that in this country today, to practice what we hold dear in our hearts. Parker says there's a difference between a heart that is broken apart and a heart that is broken open. broken apart, turns inward, goes hard, loses the capacity to feel and connect. It hurts others with the pieces of it. Broken open, that's something else entirely. That's a heart that grief has made larger, more spacious, more able to hold other people's pain alongside its own. That is the heart this moment is asking of us. And next, he talks about the grace we find, the kindness of others, the encouragement we receive. The actual help sometimes with daily tasks if needed, the non-judging witnesses, and the professional help that presents contradiction to the distorted self and other narratives. Yeah. Family, the grace we find and cultivate right here in this church without walls. And last but not least, the transformation that we embrace. If we want our souls to grow through the loss and the pain, whatever the loss is, we must eventually decide to love even more deeply than we did before. Yes, that's pretty defiant and courageous. It takes tremendous courage to love when you feel broken. I find it defiant in a good kind of way. Yes, we become more, not less for it. I do find it interesting that Jesus asks the community to do the unbinding. He doesn't do it himself. He doesn't say, Lazarus, you do it by yourself. He gives that work to the community. Both my unbinding and yours is best done in community. A lot of us think, let me go and get myself together, then I'll be back to this community. That is our shame speaking. The truth is, I'm not enough individually. We are only enough collectively. Thriving and healing are collective tasks. And sometimes it needs professional help. For too long, church has been a place where people suffered in silence, like the doctors that I came to who believed they were not good enough if they asked for the help they needed. Or our members here who did not look or accept help because they were afraid that needing a therapist meant their faith wasn't strong enough. That needing medication meant they were weak or hadn't prayed enough. That struggling with depression or anxiety or grief that wouldn't lift was somehow a spiritual or moral failure. It is not, it has never been, and whole life is not that place. Depression, anxiety, and medical conditions, complicated grief that has become debilitating is something a trained clinician can help with in ways that are real, evidence-based, and life-changing. It is wisdom, it is stewardship of the whole life that God has given us. This is why our church has a Stephen Ministries program. When you need someone to talk to, someone who is a generous listener, who has been trained to listen with compassion and care, this is a place where we can go. This is a number we can call. And this brings me to the third thing that I've learned as I listen to my clients and to my own soul through the years. Community, how it supports our mental health. The research on social isolation and mental health is unambiguous and it is sobering. Chronic loneliness carries health risks comparable to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It worsens depression, anxiety, in every mental health condition we know of. God could have put speakers in the four corners of the universe, friends, and on a constant loop, he could have been messaging us, I love you, there's hope here with me. I mean, just constantly, right? Instead, he sends his son, who moves into our neighborhood. He invited groups to gather and to share their lives in his love. Friends, we were created for relationships. Our brains are designed to maintain connection. We now know this. Yes, relationships are messy sometimes. Yet the pseudo-safety of isolation imprisons us further. In addition, we can only grow in relationship with one another. Relational support, prayer, positive regard, they influence our ability to deal with trauma, to have positive brain change and overall health. you know that a lack of social network adds 30 points to an adult's blood pressure? That's true. If you have had a heart attack, please listen up. Emotional support during the first 6 months of your recovery makes you 3 times more likely to survive. Simple, imperfect, showing up connection improves outcomes across the board. In that time of my own darkness, a community of others sustained us. This community right here. It was the friend who invited herself to join me at 5 a.m. at the gym, and she came packed and loaded with an incredible, most nutritious bagel. Egg, spinach, the works. It was the only thing I could hold down for the entire day. Everything else came back up. Sorry, too much information. Faithful friends. Or the friends who showed up on a Saturday afternoon. And they came armed with tubs, Tupperware tubs, and oils and lotions. I had no idea what they were up to. They showed up at the door, and you know when all the words have been said and all the tears have been cried? They filled the tubs with warm water, and they let the silence speak as they knelt down, and they washed our feet. And then they massaged our feet with the oils and the lotions. Let the silence speak while the water is the only thing you can hear. When all tears have been cried. Or the chaplain colleague, this is for you, Randy, that came with their motorcycles. And they invited the boys to go on a motorcycle ride, and they gave them ice creams. Over ice cream, they cried with them. And then once the tears had been had, they invited them to go shopping for backpacks for the kids in need. And they all went shopping. On one hand, holding the pain. On another, inviting them to keep on living and giving and loving. Precious. Brilliant. Community is what we need not only to survive but to thrive. Spiritually and in every way. And that's the reason Whole Life has established its whole small communities initiative. Small groups coming together to grow, laugh, cry, learn from each other, hold each other. A tapestry of diverse friends coming together to share life and his love. Whole Life family, the God who wept in the tomb in Bethany, who did not skip past the pain to get to the miracle, that God is here. In this, with us, right now. Your whole life, that's what this community is here to tend to. All of it, every part that you brought through that door. Keep naming what is true. Keep feeling it. Then engage in the unbinding, okay? Yours, someone else's. This may involve a 12-step group, a professional mental health provider, one of our Stephen ministers, or all of them. It's not weakness to accept help. It is the posture of accepting grace. It is the same posture that receives salvation. Open hands, honest need, no pretense. We were made to belong, to be in community, nurturing connection, sustaining life by the way we attend to our own history and recovery, the way we talk and are present with each other, the way we rehearse our values, the way we call out the wholeness in each other. To hope and to nurture this is to say no to every form of fatalism, discouragement, and self-despair. It is to say yes to life. Yes, a yes said amid fragile times. For even while we mourn and we struggle, we do not forget how our lives are ultimately really intertwined with God's larger dance of life, of love, and of hope. And how the past or present troubles do not have the final word. God does.
Hi, this is Randy McGray, podcast producer and host here at Whole Life Church. loving people into a lifelong friendship with God is our mission at the Whole Life Church, and our podcasts are designed to help facilitate conversations that help us grow together in that pursuit. Now that you've heard the message for this week, don't forget to check out the Whole Life Takeaways for this message. Swipe up in today's show notes and join the conversation. Speaking of conversations, each Wednesday morning we take a closer look at the week's message. That's right, the one you just listened to. We discuss practical ways to apply spiritual lessons and ask honest questions about the issues we face as Christians, all focused through the lens of grace. Your voice is a welcomed addition to that conversation. We encourage your thoughts and your questions by sending a voicemail or text to 407-965-1607 or send an email to podcast@wholelife.church. You can find everything podcast related on our website, wholelife.church/podcast. And plan on spending every Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning with us as we bring you the Whole Life Church inspiration you love straight into your headphones. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.